I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
This will make all fertility care, including IVF, far more affordable and accessible.
President Donald Trump expands access to in vitro fertilization drugs. How pro-lifers are responding.
There's so many ways that God calls us to be fruitful. It doesn't have to be children. And that's a hard one to swallow because we sort of think that's sort of part and parcel of just getting married, that that's just going to happen for us. And when it doesn't, it can be a very, very tough nut to swallow.
Infertile but fruitful. Lee Sneed tells us about her new book and trusting in God's plan for us.
We have a culture of life in this city. I'm undeniably pro-life. I believe life begins at conception, and that's just how it is.
Life and liberty. A lawmaker in Lynchburg, Virginia, tells us about his new proposal to protect the unborn. President Donald Trump is expanding access to in vitro fertilization drugs. The move includes a partnership with drug companies and the expansion of insurance options.
We're also taking historic steps to vastly expand access to insurance coverage for fertility care, including IVF, something that, as you know, was not covered, effective immediately for the first time ever. We will make it legal for companies to offer supplemental insurance plans specifically for fertility.
The president says the results will be healthier babies and many more beautiful American children. In vitro fertilization is against church teaching. The March for Life applauded the White House focus on children and fertility, but added, quote, "We continue to encourage any federal government policymaking surrounding IVF to prioritize protecting human life in its earliest stages and to fully align with basic standards of medical ethics." For more, we turn to Emma Waters, policy analyst at the Center for Technology and the Human Person at the Heritage Foundation. Emma, great to be with you. There's a lot to unpack, including why there might be some good news in this announcement. But first, as we mentioned, the Catholic Church strongly opposes in vitro fertilization. How should the faithful react to the president's expansion of IVF?
Yeah, this is a fantastic question. And I think we certainly have to begin this conversation recognizing that any expansion of IVF means that there are going to be more human embryos that are created and destroyed every year. Basic estimates that we have, and they're only basic estimates because we don't actually track how many embryos are created every year in the United States, show that as many as 97% of all embryos created in IVF never reach to a live birth, which means that IVF only has around a 3% success rate. And so that tragedy is something that we cannot ignore. And yet at the same time, the president's approach to fulfilling his campaign promise and addressing this IVF report, I think is incredibly brilliant on his part. He has not buddied up to the fertility industry, and this is not boosting the underregulated and unaccountable practices that they're endorsing. But instead, the report did two things. First, it lowered drug costs through the most favored nation status, implicitly implying that fertility industries have been way overcharging Americans for their fertility benefits so far. And then the second is that the plan enables employers to offer fertility benefit packages. And this is where the key opportunity comes in for those who really promote restorative reproductive medicine or root cause restorative treatments for infertility. And so what this means is that employers now have the right and the ability to put together plans that match their sincerely held beliefs, whether that be religious or health related. So if employers at EWTN want to offer a fertility benefit that focuses on root cause care for infertility and reproductive health conditions, that's now something that you can do without any requirement that you cover IVF or any other services like that. And that's a huge opportunity for those who have really been working hard to expand access to better care for men and women.
Now, the Heritage Foundation was among the groups applauding the president's support of fertility treatment, some of which you've mentioned. Can you tell us more about these programs?
Yeah, absolutely. So with restorative reproductive medicine, this is looking at a distinct approach to treating infertility that includes things like monthly cycle charting, sometimes even as much as every day, hormonal treatments, lifestyle and dietary fixes, medical interventions, and even surgical interventions for conditions like endometriosis or blocked fallopian tubes. And so this is a whole person approach that addresses both the health of men and women. And the studies behind it are so encouraging. So four studies that have been done just in the last couple of years alone show that couples who are undergoing treatments for restorative reproductive medicine have anywhere between a 30% and a 50% success rate for having a live birth, having a child. And this means that when they're being treated through restorative reproductive medicine, they are empowered to then have as many children as they desire and the Lord chooses to give them. They don't have to restart an expensive and incredibly difficult process like you do with IVF. So the opportunities here for good root cause care for infertility are huge. And thankfully, the science backs this up. And so this is really an opportunity for so many doctors across the United States and employers to really step up and further expand the care that they've been offering to meet this cultural moment.
Very encouraging. Now, something that's been making the headlines are fertility rates. Just how dire are the fertility rates in the United States? And what advice would you give to White House on improving the birth rate?
You know, there is no single cause for declining birth rates, and they are declining significantly to 1.6 children on average per woman, which is well below the replacement rate of 2.1 children. I mean, this is something that's affecting every aspect of society, but there's not a single thing that we can point to. It's not just finances. It's not just poor housing. It's not just cultural changes. It's all of those things taken together. So I think the big thing that I would encourage the White House and other elected representatives to focus on is one, our emphasis must be on promoting family formation, not just more babies, because ultimately children do best and they're most likely to be more children born when you have an established married family at the heart of this. And that second, that we should really take a whole government approach. So we should be looking at removing any penalties to marriage and children and then promoting the success of families. So improving housing options across the United States, finding creative ways to provide support financially for families who are undergoing the very heroic and self-sacrificial process of having children. And then also continuing to do things like centralizing children in our messaging and cultural conversations. I think the fact that Vice President J.D. Vance brings his children so many places, shows them coming off of Air Force One, messing with their mother's hair at the inauguration, are some of the most humanizing and relatable moments that are really encouraging Americans to think of children as a public good and not just a private birth.
Well, Emma, thank you so much for being with us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
A new book aims to inform and encourage on the topic of infertility and why in the darkness there is also hope, healing, and life. We recently sat down with Lee Sneed, author of the book Infertile But Fruitful. Lee, tell us about your book, Infertile But Fruitful, Finding Fulfillment When You Can't Conceive. What inspired you to write it?
You know, I wrote a couple essays for the National Catholic Register, and I got a really robust response from lots of different people, a lot of young women, some actually some acquaintances who I didn't realize were suffering from infertility, some priests who said, now I have something to share with parishioners who come to me. I don't ever know what to say, so I'm going to keep this and file it away for them. And, you know, and also from some husbands, you know, like this is going to help me care better for my wife who's suffering right now. And then I had a very inspiring, supportive mentor say to me, Lee, this is your book. And it just seemed to be the right time. So I went for it and I was lucky enough somebody wanted to publish it.
That's incredible. I think that you're right, that this is a message that people don't always speak on. So when you were writing this book, who were you writing it for?
You know, mostly I was writing it for other women. Especially, well, in a certain sense, I was writing it for myself. It was the book that I wish I'd had when I was in my 20s, a young bride, and experiencing unexplained infertility. So I had a beef, sort of, with the infertility books on the market then. It's much better now. But so many of them either were, you're not Catholic, and so ended in the IVF, or they were Catholic, but they ended in pregnancy. Mm. And it just wasn't always the story I needed to hear, because here I was again in my 20s. I wasn't, you know, advanced maternal age or any, you know, anything. Mm-hmm. And so that's who I was primarily, but because the priests and the husbands and I, you know, and then I just thought extended family, and my mother was so sad, you know, when she knew, because, you know, you want everything for your child, and when your child is having this thing that she can't have, you know, you're sad about that. And sisters, I've had friends who have trouble getting pregnant, but their sister has 8 kids, you know? Mm-hmm. And so how does that sister, without feeling guilty, talk to her? Like, you know, yes. So those, anyone, I think I say in the book that anyone who's suffering from infertility or anybody who loves them.
That's beautiful. And what do you hope those who read this book walk away with?
I hope that you can see a way through. I think that one of the main messages is that you and your husband become a family on day one. The day you say I do, you are a family already, and you're complete. And you can be fruitful in so many different ways, whether that's through adoption, or maybe you are a forever foster parent giving, you know, respite to these children in terrible situations, or maybe, you know, you're a really dedicated godmother or an aunt or an uncle. Maybe you serve your community. Maybe, you know, there's so many ways that God calls us to be fruitful. It doesn't have to be children. And that's a hard one to swallow, because we sort of think that's sort of part and parcel of just getting married, that that's just going to happen for us. And when it doesn't, it can be a very, very tough nut to swallow. You know, it's hard. And having that courage to trust in God, pick up that cross and carry it, and know that, you know, it sounds so silly, but it's going to be okay, you know, as long as you don't waver and you keep your ears and your heart and your mind open to what God's plan is for you.
Amen. You know, I've been reflecting a lot on Our Lady of Sorrows, mm-hmm. and how they say that, like, you know, it's when she, her heart gets pierced, she's able to reveal the thoughts of many hearts.
Yeah.
What are one of the hidden mysteries or graces that come with carrying the cross of infertility?
I mean, to put it really simply, just that things, you know, life is hard, and there's beauty in that, that things don't work out the way you plan. It's not up to you. And that through suffering, you're just brought into such close proximity to the heart of Jesus and to his mother. You think about all that she took on with her fiat, and this is your fiat, and you know, it doesn't look like what you planned. Certainly, Blessed Mother didn't have that in mind for her either, and she kept saying yes. So I think that's really, I think, one of the beauties that can come from it. But again, you have to sort of get there yourself. Mm-hmm. I hope this book can kind of get people there.
Now, you included at the end of each chapter some lessons learned along the way. What made you want to include this section?
You know, I think there's so much personal narrative. It's a lot. I really use my husband's and my story from when we met and got married and then through, because we, you know, we were sort of trying to get pregnant for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. You know, some more intense years. Yeah. But, you know, we were always open for it and sort of hoping. And I think it could be easy to get lost in that narrative. Mm-hmm. And so I want to sort of pinpoint those things that are important when you're maybe in that season that I'm talking about, that my husband and I were doing, like, right at that moment, about, you know, your friendships, your relationships, choosing a good doctor, ways to take care of yourself, what you can say no to, you know, saints to call on, you know, those sorts of things. So I think it is, because it's, you know, it's, as my husband was proofing some pages for me, said, this is really personal, isn't it? It's a lot of our story, but I just try to draw little nuggets of wisdom that we learned along the way, lessons along the way.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then are there any particular lessons that stick out to you that you'd like to share with our viewers?
I do think choosing the right doctor is really important, and knowing what the church teaches about, especially right now, IVF is so heavy in the news, knowing what our church teaches and the beauty that, you know, human sexuality and reproduction and all that we have in the body of Christ. It's really important to know exactly what it is, and that you're going, you know, what you, especially if you're not seeing a Catholic doctor or an APRO doctor. I think it's also important to know that just like artificial reproductive technologies, NAPRO doesn't always work either. Mm. You know, you can do everything by the book. You can have really great, you know, chances of success. and it's not a guarantee either, which too bad. But it's still, it is a gift in itself, understanding, you know, that sort of holistic healthcare for women and honoring our bodies and our cycles and, you know, our capacity for motherhood anyway.
And Lee, can you speak to how the absence of children doesn't make a marriage any less fruitful?
Yeah, you're a family on the first day of your marriage. The day that you say I do, you become a family, and you're not incomplete. You're not lesser than other families that have children. And I think that we have this common vernacular that talks about starting a family. Well, you've started it. When you decided to get married, you've started a family. And the fruits are maybe not going to be actual biological children, but they can be so many. And that's why, you know, you've been brought together and you've become one in marriage. And I think that that's just, it's important because we don't want to leave those people out of the conversation, and we don't want to leave them feeling other, especially, you know, at mass or any kind of church-related activities.
You mentioned adoption and mm-hmm. how not everyone is called to it. How did you choose to treat this topic in your book?
You know, I talk about our decision about it. It wasn't, for us, it wasn't a hard decision. You know, obviously we were disappointed, and we really, you know, we're curious, you know, you're looking forward to what you and your husband are going to make together, you know? And I remember saying that out loud once, and my husband said to me, like, this is what we've made together. These children are, you know, what we've made together. And he was so right. In fact, we always joke that they're more a Sneed than either one of us. They've like taken all of the family qualities and really done some really interesting things with it. But I also talk about how you don't have to give up trying to conceive while you pursue adoption. So if you know that you're maybe open to both or open to even considering it, that, you know, it's important to know that you don't have to stop trying to conceive a biological pregnancy. And actually, I have I have a few friends who contributed their own personal stories of infertility. And one she had adopted two children and then mysteriously got pregnant. And she doesn't know what's in the future, but she's, you know, open to both. And so having her perspective, I think, was really good because it wasn't mine. And I want women, when they pick up, or anyone who picks up the book, to be able to find their story in it too.
Beautiful, Lee. Thank you so much for being with us today and for sharing your story and for writing this book that is very needed.
My pleasure.
In vitro fertilization is also a big topic of discussion in Italy. A court ruling earlier this year said same-sex female couples who use IVF abroad can both be legally recognized as parents, even if one is not the biological mother. EWTN Vatican contributor Zofia Zubak has more.
Now even the structure of the natural family that is coming apart under the blows of this judicial activism.
According to the Italian National Registry of Medically Assisted Reproduction, across Italy in 2022, more than 60,000 embryos were frozen.
It sometimes seems as if people are determined to have a child using these techniques, even if this means eliminating other children or freezing others.
In 2004, Italy passed Law 40 to regulate medically assisted reproduction, banning cryopreservation, also known as the freezing of eggs, and limiting fertilization to no more than 3 embryos. Over the years, starting in 2009, parts of this law were altered. Alessandro Fiori, a lawyer at the Italian pro-life organization Pro Vita e Famiglia, believes the reason for this is judicial activism.
That has produced the situation that basically you can create more embryos than you need. And that has also produced the fact that many of these embryos that are not used, that are not transferred in the womb, have to be frozen, have to be cryoconserved.
Two other adjustments made to Law 40 include allowing a third party's involvement in the case of absolute infertility. And although IVF access is banned for singles and homosexual couples, experts say the court has indirectly introduced the concept of the same-sex family into the Italian system.
If the couple has access to IVF abroad, and the child is born in Italy, the intended mother has a right to be recognized as such. So it introduces sort of the two-mother structure in the Italian system, which is alien to the Italian law and also to the constitutional framework.
Giorgia Brambilla, a professor of bioethics at the Pontifical University Athenaeum Regina Apostolorum in Rome, points to another development in Italy's assisted reproduction.
Another innovation that has been made possible over time is pre-implantation diagnosis, which is used in cases where there is a risk factor for genetic diseases. The embryo cells are analyzed before implantation, and if a genetic defect is found, the embryo is discarded. L'embrione viene eliminato.
Although hopes and intentions of having a child are understandable, there are significant ethical issues with the practice of medically assisted reproduction.
L'embrione viene prodotto in laboratorio.
The embryo is produced in the laboratory, selected if imperfect, and left in the freezer indefinitely if not useful. This is clearly a very serious prospect that goes against human dignity, and there is no doubt that it is a human being, because as science easily tells us, life begins at the start of an organism's life cycle, and the life cycle begins with fertilization.
Il ciclo vitale inizia con la fecondazione.
In Rome, Zofia Tubac, for EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
Lawmakers in Uruguay pass a measure to decriminalize euthanasia. Uruguay is set to become the first Latin American nation to legalize euthanasia through its legislative process. Colombia and Ecuador have decriminalized the practice through Supreme Court decisions. Uruguay already bans any mention of God in oaths of office and calls Christmas, quote, family day. The country's church leaders say this vote is another step towards a culture of death. A notable pro-life senator has introduced a bill to ban Obamacare-funded abortions, a move that could impact your taxpayer dollars. Republican Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri brought forward a bill last week that would protect unborn children from abortions and minors from so-called gender transition. The bill would prohibit taxpayer funds from going towards abortions or transgender procedures for minors through Obamacare. While the Hyde Amendment already forbids federal funding for abortions, Hawley's new bill would write Hyde language directly into the federal coverage terms of health plans. Lawmakers in Southern Virginia, city of Lynchburg, moved forward with a measure regarding abortion clinics. Early last week, Councilmember Martin Mischens brought forward a proposal that would prevent abortion clinics from being located within 1,000 feet of schools, churches, libraries, parks, and daycares. There are currently no abortion clinics located in Lynchburg. However, Councilmember Mischens says there is no review or approval process in place for abortion clinics in the city, should one ever open.
I think it's pretty simple. We have a majority here in our city that believes life begins at conception, without a doubt, right? And we got to protect that, right? So life is sacred. It's one of the first things in our declaration: life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, right? Life is where it all begins. So we have to protect life in Lynchburg.
The proposal now heads to the city's planning commission for review. Coming up, a global gathering, a report from an initiative to protect families and the unborn, and the role played by the United States. Pro-life leaders from 50 countries took part in the annual Geneva Consensus Declaration, or GCD, Pro-Life Summit in Washington, D.C. today.
We have 50 countries coming from every major region of the world. That has to be an encouragement.
The initiative is in its fifth year. The declaration aims to protect life at all stages, defend the family as foundational to any healthy society, and declare the right of nations to make laws protecting life and their values. This year, the Republic of Guinea joined the coalition, and the United States rejoined. This year marks the first time the U.S. has been a member of the GCD since it was initiated under the first Trump administration in 2020. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.